Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Greetings and welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments. Why Pope Benedict XVI's prime title is Vicar of Rome and his cathedral, St. John Lateran.
When Pius XII reached out to the Hungarian people with three encyclicals and one radio message in the space of just over 2 weeks.
And our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover. Well, thanks very much for joining me. As we know, Pope Benedict XVI is the 264th successor of Peter, yet his prime title is Vicar of Rome. And again, his cathedral is not St. Peter's, but St. John Lateran. That's why on Saturday, 7th of May 2005, less than a month after taking office as Roman pontiff, he took possession of this cathedral. As an ancient saying goes, the mother of all churches. And indeed, since then, he's been back by papal standards rather often, the last scheduled visit being Saturday 21st of October, to mark the beginning of the academic year of the Catholic University located there. Among the events marking this visit are the unveiling of the new Aula Magna, which will be dedicated to him, as well as another two dedications, a reading room and a library to be named after two of his predecessors to the See of Peter, respectively the late Pope John Paul II and the blessed Pope Pius IX. In an effort to find out more about the significance of the Pope's cathedral, I turned to the Superior General of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement, Father Jim Pugliese, who's also director of a Rome-based ecumenical centre known as the Centro Pro Unione. The Pope is the 264th successor of Peter, and his prime title is the Vicar of Rome. His cathedral is St. John Lateran and not St. Peter's. Is there a specific reason for this?
Well, yes, mainly because St. Peter's was a pilgrimage place. It was the tomb of the martyr. And the cathedral church of the Diocese of Rome has always been St. John Lateran's. In fact, that was the residence of the popes up until really modern times, because, you know, the summer residence used to be the Quirinale, which is now the presidential residence. So the pope lived in the city of Rome as its bishop. And because of political changes, that is, with the unification of Italy, the removal of the Papal States, then the Pope really was restricted to this little small area, which is known as Vatican City State, another country. But technically, St. Peter's is a very large church, but it's not even the parish church of the Vatican. You know, we all know St. Anne's is the parish church of Vatican City. So it's, we might just say, a big neighborhood church. But, of course, it's the center for all pilgrimage of people here to Rome, because where Peter was martyred and where Peter was buried became a place of worship from the early times, Constantinian times, who built the first church there and then made it larger and larger. So technically, the Pope doesn't have a cathedral in the Vatican. There's just a parish church in the Vatican, but his cathedral, since his first and foremost, the most important title, is Bishop of Rome.
Why Bishop of Rome?
It's an ecclesiological reason, obviously, because it is a local church that was founded here in this city, first among the Jews who accepted Jesus as their Messiah. And then we know that Paul came to the city of Rome, and he worked not among the Jewish community, even though he was always Jewish, but among those were the Gentiles, the so-called pagans, that would have been the Romans or the Greeks that lived here that were not of Jewish origin. And so this church is founded on these two pillars, Peter and Paul, one representing the unity of the peoples to whom the gospel is now being preached, those first to the house of Israel, and then secondly those, as Israel's mission was to all of the world, to those outside of the house of Israel. And so this became a local church, like a church in London, in New York, Chicago, Buenos Aires, wherever. And so this was the seat of its head, which would have been the Bishop of Rome. So this title is a very important ecclesiastical title, because it's a sacramental title, The title of Pope is something that's added on as almost as an honor. We know that some churches call their bishops Papa, just like we do, and Papa Shenouda, for example, the Coptic Church in Egypt. It just means it's the father of this church. And so the original title and the most venerated title is being the Bishop of Rome. And we notice already in his coat of arms, the tiara is not there. It's the bishop's mitre. So he is underscoring the role that first and foremost is a sacramental role, that he is bishop of a local church, a particular church. It's not just any particular church. It's a church that was founded here in Rome by the two apostles, Peter and Paul, and a church which was sanctified by the lives of many martyrs, which is the reason why Rome was so important, because of the quality of its faith in the past. And I'm sure with the former Cardinal Ratzinger, this point is very, very important, especially as he looks towards the re-Christianization, if you want, of Europe, that it was founded on the blood of the martyrs, those men and women who gave their very lives for the sake of the gospel.
St. John Lateran is considered the mother and head of all churches of the city and of the world, as is written, as is inscribed over its entrance, Omnium Orbis et Orbis Ecclesiarum Mater et Caput. Can you explain?
It's the mother church because from its baptistry, which was the building which is separate from the church, but where all the Christians of this local church were born eventually, is born all churches. Now, this is a little bit a tricky interpretation. And the reason I say this is because the mother church is always referred to as Jerusalem, right? We have this tradition which is very, very strong among the Orientals and among the Westerners, that the first church, the primary church, was the Church of Jerusalem, presided over by James and not by Peter. And in fact, this is one of the ecclesial traditions that we have, that all communities descend originally from the church in Jerusalem, which has a symbolic sense because it represents the new Jerusalem, the heavenly Jerusalem, the Jerusalem that will become the seat of the glory of God. But Rome, because of the fact that it took on importance not only from the religious point of view, where there are many people who accepted the faith, especially first, as I said before, among the Jews that were here, but also among all the other people that were living here, but also because of the fact that Rome acquires a political force. It became the center of the empire. It was the center of the empire at the time of Jesus' death. And so it was a force to be reckoned with. And we know that the role of religion and politics was always very, very important throughout the course of all of history, that emperors wanted to have a unified political base, but also because of the fact that religion many times served as the glue of that political base. And so when eventually the Roman Empire, the political aspect of it, falls into disuse, it is the Bishop of Rome who acquires the power, steps into the vacuum that is created to protect the people, to provide services, to provide judgment, etc. So the Pope then, the Bishop of Rome, begins to acquire a more of a political sense as well as a religious and spiritual sense. And so from this point of view, St. John Lateran is considered then to be the mother of all churches, from which all churches are born, because of the fact of his communion with his bishop.
My thanks there go to Father Jim Pugliese, director of the Rome-based Ecumenical Center, Centro Pro Unione, run by the Atonement Friars, of which he is the Superior General. And now, as announced at the top of the programme, I'd like to focus my attention on Hungary. Hungary is commemorating the 50th anniversary of its uprising against the Russians. If you've ever been to this bustling city on the River Danube, you may have noticed the pockmarks of bullet holes in its great buildings, left there as a reminder of a 50-year-old national trauma. The 1956 Hungarian Revolution, which was brutally crushed by the then Soviet Union. As you may recall, for 45 years, Hungary was under the grip of that communist regime. Yet, in 1956, Hungarians courageously tried to topple their Soviet masters. The struggle did not last long, only from the 23rd of October to the 4th of November. But it's an event which has often been referred to as the first attempt to draw the so-called Iron Curtain then in place across Eastern Europe. And indeed, for a few euphoric days, it even appeared the uprising against the might of what was then the world's second superpower might succeed. Particularly symbolic to me of that period is that image of the toppling of the great statue of Stalin, depicted in a black and white photograph of the time, where the grey stone head of the dictator lies solitary on the tram tracks of a Budapest street. You may well have seen it. But anyway, hope to regain freedom was short-lived, and reality hit back hard at the cost of more than 3,000 dead, with thousands more fleeing the nation in search of a better future. It happened suddenly, less than 2 weeks since the beginning of the uprising. As headlines on the front page of Britain's Daily Mail on November the 5th of that year testify, I'd like to read you the first lines of that article.
Budapest crushed. Red troops storm into Parliament. Hungary, the little country that dared to defy Russia, was murdered today. More than 1,000 tanks surrounded Budapest. Soviet soldiers stormed into Parliament buildings after the Premier had just broadcast to the world an agonized call for help, marching him out at gunpoint.
In the light of these dramatic events, you may wonder how the Vatican reacted, whether the Pope of the time, Pius XII, spoke out at all. Well, I did a little research and was astonished to find out that during those 2 weeks of struggle, the Pontiff wrote 3 encyclicals. I'll read you the surprising sequence of dates. 28th of October, 5 days into the uprising, an encyclical by the Latin title of Luctuosissimi Eventus is promulgated. 1st of November, 8 days into the uprising, an encyclical by the Latin title Letemur ad modum is promulgated. 5th of November, on the very day of the crackdown on the part of the Soviet troops, the encyclical Datis Nuperime is promulgated. Hungarian-born Benedictine father Adam Somorjai, currently working at the Vatican Secretariat of State, tells us more about these encyclicals.
During these 2 short weeks, Pope Pius XII published 3 encyclicals. In the first, he invites the Christian world to the prayer for the Hungarian, and not only for the Hungarian.
Let's read briefly from that encyclical.
Our paternal heart is deeply moved by the sorrowful events which have befallen the people of Eastern Europe, and especially of our beloved Hungary, which is now being soaked in blood by a shocking massacre. And not only is our heart moved, but so too are the hearts of all men who cherish the rights of civil society, the dignity of man, and the liberty which is due to individuals and to nations. May all men come to realize that today's unsettled international order cannot be stabilized by an armed might which brings many to their death, nor by that violence inflicted upon citizens which is powerless to compel their inner assent, nor by those deceitful fictions which corrupt the mind and are as repugnant to the rights of a civic and Christian conscience as they are to the rights of the Church. Nor can the breath of just freedom ever be extinguished by external force.
In the second, he speaks about his joy that the revolution has success. And in the third, again, after the fall of the revolution, he speaks in Christian terms, is an invitation to the prayer again for all the Christian world. What the Pope says is directed to all the Christian and all the people of good will. in Hungary for 33 years was silence publicly about these encyclicals, and only after the Annus Mirabilis 1989 we could speak about this.
But Pope Pius XII didn't just write encyclicals at a time when popes were not often heard on radio. He also made an appeal to put an end to the bloodshed. He did so over the airwaves, through the microphones of our radio station.
Dio vi aiuterà, Dio sarà la vostra forza. Dio, 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 risuoni questo ineffabile nome.
Speaking in Italian, he said, "May the name of God, fount of all rights, justice and freedom, echo once again in Parliament, in the streets, at home and in the workplace, on the lips of intellectuals and workers, in the press and on radio."
Il nome di Dio come sinonimo di pace e di libertà sia il vessillo degli uomini di buon volere. Il vincolo dei popoli e delle nazioni, il segno in cui si riconosceranno i fratelli e i collaboratori dell'opera della Chiesa.
And 50 years after Pius XII's radio message to the Hungarian people, our present Pope, Benedict XVI, is sending his representative, or legate, in the person of the former Secretary of State, Cardinal Angelo Sodano, to this nation's capital, Budapest, in an effort to celebrate a date linked forever to freedom from the iron grip of the Soviet Union. It's the 23rd of October, a date symbolically chosen for the proclamation of the Republic of Hungary. Back in 1989, as the so-called Iron Curtain was finally drawn right across Eastern Europe. Chosen precisely to coincide with that of the beginning of the 1956 October Uprising. I hope you enjoyed this feature focusing on the Hungarian uprising of 1956. My thanks go to those who made this program possible, in particular Hungarian-born Benedictine Father Adam Somorjai, who's currently working at the Vatican's Secretariat of State, our Hungarian program here at Vatican Radio, and Sean Patrick Lovett and Edward Penton, whose voices you also heard. Finally, on a total change of pace and tone, we join our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite Father Reginald Foster. Today, rather unusually, I've given him a speech by Paul VI to translate from the Latin into English. Stay tuned. Father Foster, as you well know, in 1967, Pope Paul VI went on a pastoral journey to Turkey. And I discovered that one of his speeches, I think, was delivered in Latin. So today I'd like to do the opposite of what we normally do, and I'll give you the text in Latin to translate into English. Okay?
I'm sure that, you know, I think this is, it must be in the Liturgy of the Hours in the breviary. I mean, this speech or this talk, I think I've seen this before, but it doesn't make any difference to me. Indeed, con vitas cum constantissima voluntate nostri coniungitur, ea omnia quantum poterimus perficiendi, quae diem maturare queant, quo inter ecclesiam occidentis et ecclesiam orientis expleta communio redintegretur. Greater, there's a double, that's the end of the sentence, more or less. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which indeed desire is connected with our...
In his speech, Pope Paul VI uses the royal we.
With our most persevering wish of doing all those things as much as we will be able, which may be able to hasten the day on which complete communion may be restored between the Church of the West and the Church of the East.
Why don't we skip a little bit of that paragraph now and go on to the next?
This is, of course, actually the apostles. Since it is, we are most convinced.
Cum persuasissimum sit nobis.
Persuasissimum sit nobis. Non aliud nomen esse sub cielo datum hominibus. In quo portiat nos salvos fieri, quodque iistem hominibus tribure fraternitatem pacemque posset, init nuncium propteria pronis aureus audimus, quem Ioannes discipulus illi carissimus ab Epheso ad ecclesiae
ad Asiae
ecclesias misit.
What does all that mean?
Since we are most convinced that no other name has been given under heaven, this is when the apostles.
What is the word heaven?
Sub cielo.
Like sky.
No other name has been given under heaven to human beings in which it is necessary that we be saved. Then he quotes Acts 4. And which name is able to grant fraternity and peace to the same human beings. Yeah? Since we are convinced of all this stuff. Therefore, pronis auribus, with willing ears, we hear the message
of John.
Which John? That most beloved disciple sent from Ephesus to the churches of Asia. To the churches of Asia. And this is John's first words of his gospel, of course. Quod vidimus et audimus, annunciamus vobis, ut et vos societatem habeatis nobiscum, et societas nostra sit cum Patre et cum Filio eius Iesu Christo. That which we have seen and we have heard, we are announcing to you, so that even you may have alliance, if you wish, societatem, or union with us.
Communion
with us, okay. And that our communion may be with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ.
Okay, one last sentence here.
Oh, that's enough, I have to go home.
No, come on. This last sentence here. I'll read it. Quoniamque in qualibet ecclesia cuius libet, loci, hoc divini amoris efficitur mysterium. Nome exinde locutionem illam tralaticiam profectam esse putemus. Ex qua variorum locorum. Ecclesiae inter se veluti sorores is sisters. Appellari consueverunt.
Oh, who wrote this? My predecessor wrote this. Hamiletus Tondini, I can tell you right now.
Why?
I can tell from his style.
I was going to ask you that once you finished.
And he got sick then in 69, and I took his place.
Oh, wow.
And he says...
Was he a good Latinist?
Ooh, wonderful. He was classical, but he was not obscure or unintelligible.
How can you tell that he wrote that?
Oh, you can see it right away. People, when they read a document, they say, this is Foster, this is not Foster. But you know this after a while. It's like music. You know, Mendelssohn and Beethoven are not the same.
And this is what kind of music?
This is on the, Mendelssohn side. And because in any church you want, of any place you please, this mystery of divine love is carried out. Isn't it, None, can we not, therefore, think that that traditional phrase has come from which the churches of different places have been accustomed to be called sisters among themselves? Was glorious. No, he was great.
What about Paul VI? What was his?
He was great.
He was very strict about language. No?
Well, yes, and the fact is, he had tremendous roots, and a thought, and a vision, and I adore him. And that, is that the end of the story?
No, it's not.
Then they go on to explain the decree, and he says, "Yeah, couldn't we say that from this thing?" We have this expression that all the churches are sisters. Veloti, as it were, sisters.
Paul VI, I mean, for our younger listeners, he used to use the royal we. How do you say royal
we? Well, everyone uses the royal we. We tried to change this. And it never passed.
Meaning you.
Well, people in the office tried to change this. Started saying, I. Got it? And he said, okay, if the Pope says I and not we, well, then let's write I.
The late Pope John Paul II, you mean? So it only started with John Paul II.
Yeah. The others just didn't have, Paul VI didn't. They just didn't have the courage or the idea.
John Paul I.
Well, I don't know, for 1 month he didn't.
33 days.
Yeah, not too much. But I said, listen, friends, I protested. I said, if this man wants to say I, well, then let's say I. And you know what they said in the office? My boss was still in charge. Well, now he's in heaven. And he said, no, the Pope can't say that. The Pope has to say we. Which drove us crazy, because we would have these letters and encyclicals and I, but we had to think of we. And not mine, but ours. Oh, it was a terrible confusion.
And in the end, you started using I.
No, no.
And now, when you translate into Latin...
Well, now it's going to be back to we.
Heartfelt thanks there, as always, to our popular Latin lover. As you know, his name is Father Reginald Foster. He's a Carmelite who's currently working as the Pope's own Latinist at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. And that brings us up to time. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbury. Be sure to check out our website. The address is www.vaticanradio.org/English. Bye for now, and don't forget that we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.